Okay, I've got opening music.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. For all the latest that's going on in our little corner of the world here in Louisville and Kentucky, we have special guest David Adams with us tonight. You guys know David. This guy has been involved in everything. Campaign staff at Rand Paul was very instrumental in getting him elected. We're also going to get into some of the more serious news tonight with the Boston bombing. But as usual, let's go right to Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Yeah, doing all right. I'm on time. How about that?
Well, you know, I noticed that. It's kind of interesting because every time I go to the studio and I'm looking, I'm like, okay, where's Ed? Where's Ed? Where's Ed? And you know who was on time today? David Adams was on time, and I was waiting for Ed Martin. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting, but you were here. I appreciate it. That's what happens when we have guests. You find a way to get here, so it's all good. But in the meantime, you know, let's go ahead and get into this real quick. The latest word is in Massachusetts, at the Boston Marathon, three people are dead, over 100 injured, some serious injuries, some limb injuries. Apparently, there may be some people that will lose limbs. They had two bombs that exploded on the marathon route, one right at the finish line exploded first. There was a second bomb about a mile prior to that that exploded second. But at the time, this was a couple of hours after. This was a couple of hours after the lead runners and the winners and all those people were done. Essentially, what you had left was a little over 5,000 people out of 24,000 runners. These are the people that don't do this for anything more than just fun. They run it every year. That's kind of a personal deal. Those are the ones that were left on the course. There were 5,000 people at risk. And the latest report says that there were other devices found. One was an incendiary device, not an explosive device, but an incendiary device, according to the Boston mayor, that was found at the JFK Library. And the other one was one that the police are supposedly dismantling now. That's the latest report I have. just to keep everybody updated. We'll try to stay up with that story as we go along. You know, we're not CNN, we're not Fox, we're not going to spend a whole hour on that story, but we do need to make sure people are updated and make sure everybody understands what's going on here. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it, one thing that I've already noticed is it's everything from, you know, is it Al-Qaeda or is it, you know, Patriot Day? Is it some right-wing group or some right-wing, you know, lone wolf guy or what? It's like, really, people, let it lay. You know, and nobody knows anything. It's just let it lay. It just amazes me the sad state of affairs nowadays where immediately something goes off and, you know, there's the obligatory, well, we'll say prayers for the victims and, oh, by the way, it's probably some crazy right-wing gun rights nut guy blew it up or, you know, or who knows?
Well, funny you should say that.
Yeah.
Funny you should say that because David Adams is on the line with us now. First of all, sir, how are you?
Hey, doing great. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, sir. And, you know, we brought David on tonight for a reason, and that reason is David has actually had the guts to go forward. Not only is David one of our best guests, but I love David Adams to death. He does great work. But he's also had the guts to go forward with a lawsuit against the governor of Kentucky, Steve Beshear, concerning these Obamacare mandates that Steve Beshear decided he wanted to play. But what's interesting is David is also very active in the Tea Party. David was very instrumental. Correct me if I'm wrong here, David, but David was very instrumental in getting Rand Paul elected to the Senate. As a matter of fact, David worked with us, and we were able to help introduce Rand Paul to Louisville on our former show and with David's help. And David, of course, has been on with that. He's also worked for Phil Moffitt. You know, I could go on and on and on and sit here and talk about David Adams. But the Tea Party, David, before we get on to your lawsuit, I really want to ask you this because one of the first things I immediately assumed when this happened was they're going to try to find some way to tie this into some kind of a Tea Party crazy guy or something. It's funny how things go in this situation, but right now the Obama administration is under attack for the drones in America, buying up all the ammunition. The Tea Party is under attack because everybody wants to attack the Tea Party, primarily because we have people like Rand Paul and Tom Massey up in Congress who are finally forcing these guys to account for everything. There was a story out earlier, was there not, accusing the Tea Party of being involved in this already?
CNN's all over it. They're already suggesting very strongly that that's the case. And, you know, it's interesting, I suppose, that if you look at these nuts that are perpetrating some of these mass killings here in recent years, they all actually, once the dust settles, they all turn out, it appears, to be left-wing nuts.
Well, they really do. They really do. I totally agree with that. And I tell you, if you want to get into mass murders in this society, and we're not going down that road. I'm not going to waste your time. I know you got other things to do.
Right.
But, you know, when you talk about these mass murders, you talk about, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing, Waco, you know, those involved, you know, mass, you know, injuries and killings and everything else. But the number one killing thing in America is a left-wing propaganda machine, and it's called abortion. You know, so if we really care about kids, we would be getting into that conversation. You know, David, I tell you, I'm not going to waste any more time with you on this because I know we've got other things to go on. There are a lot of things going on. It appears now that Congress is actually going to start reading part of this Obamacare bill that they passed without even looking at it because they've already had to go back through and exempt medical equipment manufacturers from taxes. They went through and exempted them from taxes now, so these guys don't have to pay the same sales tax when they sell equipment like everybody else does in America. And we've got states that are going out there looking at funding these so-called health benefit exchanges. Right here in Kentucky, Governor Steve Beshear created a Kentucky Health Benefit Exchange, but he did this by executive order without the approval of the Kentucky Congress. Is that basically the gist of the lawsuit?
It is. It's pretty simple. You know, when you go back to the July 17, 2012 executive order filed by Governor Beshear, you can Google Beshear executive order health, and it'll come right up. You can read it for yourself. There's a brief section in there where he explains his authority to issue this executive order. And what he's doing in the executive order is, make no mistake, he is creating a permanent new permanent bureaucracy that raises money via taxes and or fees, you know, whatever label you want to put on them. It raises money and spends money, and that in order to do that, you have to have legislative approval. You just have to. What he cites in there as his authority is, one, the Kentucky Constitution, and interestingly, he doesn't cite any particular section in the Constitution because there's nothing in the Constitution. So he would be cutting his own throat if he, presumably, if he did cite a section in the Constitution, because the Constitution is so beautiful and so clear that if he said, well, it's in section such and such, you go in there and look at it, and in 5 seconds you'd know that wasn't the case. Now, Kentucky Revised Statutes is a little less clear. However, when he also in this section where he explains his ability to do this executive order, he cites specifically KRS 12.028.
Right.
If you go in there and wade through that just a little bit, it took me a couple of minutes, and I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but read a paragraph. And it said in there very clearly that he could do this when the legislature's not in session. You know, if there was a need for the government to create a new bureaucracy, he could do that without legislative approval, but that he would have to get it when the legislature came back into session. And so he did this in the summer of 2012. The 2013 General Assembly has come and gone. It's all over now. He did not get legislative approval. He could theoretically call a special session, but I'm telling you, and it's very clear that, you know, the Senate passed two Obamacare repeal bills, Senate bills 39 and 40 in the last General Assembly. They're not going to give him authority to set up Obamacare in Kentucky. And frankly, I don't think the House will either. You know, there wasn't even a bill. There wasn't even an effort in the House, for all their saber rattling about how great Obamacare is going to be. And when I say they, it's primarily Tom Burch, there in Louisville, who is saying that Obamacare is going to work out great and everybody wants it and needs it. But we're missing something very plain and simple here. The governor does not have legislative authority to do what he's done, and it's required that he obtain legislative authority in order to do it. Therefore, it needs to be undone. We need to shut down the Obamacare health benefit exchange right now.
Well, I'll be honest with you, David. I mean, I've looked at KRS 12.028. As a matter of fact, I've got it up on a computer right now. And the one thing that the one word that you didn't use is very key here is temporary. Because what 12.028 does, and you explained it very well, but it does give the governor and elected state executive officers, elected being a key here, to make changes. But these are only temporary changes. It clearly points out in 12.028 that these are temporary changes. And the reason for our listeners who don't really know this, with Kentucky having a part-time legislature, we have what's called a short term and a year that's called a long term. Even numbered years or long term session, short years are in the odd number session. So what happens here is, because of this part time legislature, Kentucky, you got to have a way to be mobile. So we have allowed for that in KRS, especially in 12.028, to give the governor some room to maneuver. But as you said, it's supposed to be taken up by the General Assembly as soon as they convene. And that is basically your argument, is because he has violated the temporary structure here. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Ed, go ahead. I know you're raring to go.
Well, you know, the thing that gets me is we hear about this year putting in executive orders for Obamacare,
mm-hmm.
but the irony comes in. It's like, well, let's face it. We know he's wanted gambling for a long time, but he's not getting it. And that might have something to do with it. He's wanted gambling so bad for so long, and he's not getting it through the legislature, so he's trying to, you know, he should have tried the executive order there, or the temporary executive order, but he didn't. And I think David's right. If he doesn't have the votes, you know he doesn't have the votes. And not at all unlike John Yarmuth once said during his election. It's like, hey, you know, once Obamacare starts to take effect, if you want to repeal it, you're going to, you know, have to take things away from people. And I think to some degree, maybe that's Bashir's play. He knows it's unconstitutional. He has to know it's unconstitutional. But he's hoping he can get his hook. Maybe he's hoping he can get his hooks into some people and, you know, get some beneficiaries going on it, or he can parlay that into some leverage. But, yeah, as far as constitutionality goes, I agree. I'm learning right now as we listen, but he had his session.
Well, I tell you what else is fascinating here, too, though, because this is really interesting to me because, you know, there was a time when you really didn't have to worry as much about this kind of backdoor crap going on. But to me, it seems very apparent now. I mean, we've had Barack Obama go on record, and we've got a YouTube video we'll post up on the website, I guess, later, where Obama has flat out admitted that he can bypass the Congress anytime he wants to with executive order. And right now, it seems to me that a lot of Democrats, not just in Kentucky, but around the nation, feel empowered and emboldened now to abuse their perceived power. I think this is a great example right here by Governor Bashir. It's what I call the Barack Obama effect, because Obama thinks he can do executive order, do anything he wants to, and on a state level, Bashir thinks he has that same authority. Would you guys agree or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think that when it comes down to it, that's the key point on how we've built this monstrosity. And by extension, it's the way to take it down. When you look at what we've done, it's been under Republican and Democrat presidents that we have expanded the power of the office of the president to the point that Obama feels very comfortable doing these executive orders on a much larger scale. Frankly, Bush did the same thing. The Republicans on that. And to their great shame, you know, it should be highly embarrassing. And here's my message to Kentucky Democrats: is if you let Bashir rewrite the rules in such a way that he sets a precedent that he doesn't need the legislature, the legislators are really just 138 rubber stamps to sit there and look pretty and do what he wants them to do, and if they, you know, or just to sit down and shut up and eat their gruel, then let's be serious. You know, the next governor could be a Republican. Or at some point, we're going to have a Republican governor again. And if we've got this as our precedent, you're going to have a Republican governor doing things to Democrats that they're really not going to be happy about. And the time to have stopped it is right now.
Well, and that's why one of the reasons that one of the terms we use on this show all the time is the uniparty, because, you know, as you pointed out, George Bush used executive order. You know, a lot of presidents use executive order. You know, that's nothing new, but not to the point. It doesn't seem to be that past presidents have used executive order to dictate to the Congress or to the American people what we will and we won't do. A lot of times these executive orders are for minuscule stuff that really doesn't hurt our freedom and our liberty, if you will. But it looks like Barack Obama has taken that to a whole new level, and it's filtering across every state across the nation. And I think this is a great example. You know, I mean, let's talk about the fallacies of Obamacare, David, because, you know, we now know, as you, me, Ed Martin, and many others were pointing out throughout this whole Obamacare so-called debate and fiasco, that this was going to put one hell of a cost on the American people that we can't afford, that it's not going to insure the people that it's intended to insure, that it's going to raise taxes. We're already seeing the effects of that, and this is before we even get into the full implementation of Obamacare, and that's on a federal level. When we look at Kentucky, another situation that you've been greatly involved in is the Kentucky retirement system. And when you look at that retirement system, the bundle that it's in, the joke that they just passed on legislation in this session that's not going to do anything to fix it, you know, and then you're going to have new taxes once again just for these health care exchanges that Bashir wants put out there. Are the Kentucky people that stupid where they don't see the grand vision here is just to keep taking money without giving you anything in return?
Well, unfortunately, it's hard to answer that question with a no. You know,
I understand.
When you're talking about the population at large, Yeah, people are just are so frantically tuned out to the political process. They just they have more immediate fish to fry, and so sitting down and actually understanding the civics lesson that you need is some kind of a background for understanding what's going on in Frankfurt and what's going on in Washington D.C. It's just not there. You know, we ought to be teaching our elementary school kids economics, and if you're not, you know, they're not getting that in school. If you're not doing that at home, you're really doing your children a disservice, because what a clear-eyed analysis of healthcare regulation in this country shows beyond a shadow of a doubt is that we've spent the last half a century plus some gradually increasing the role of government in the healthcare sphere, and every single time we've done that, it's made the situation worse. And so we're getting to we've passed the tipping point, and we're reaching the point that as we completely destroy our healthcare system with government regulation, the economics of Obamacare is horrible. The politics, from their perspective, from the left perspective, is brilliant, because what you're going to wind up having is millions and millions and millions of desperate Americans clamoring in 2 to 3 years' time for the federal government to completely take over the healthcare system and just fix it all. And you're talking about real, honest to goodness communism. This idea, you know, we've been talking about the death panels, and the left keeps lampooning that. That will be up and running in no time, and you'll see people literally, you know, almost literally eating each other, turning on each other, and saying, you know, don't kill my grandma, kill his.
Aren't we essentially already on the fringes of that? I mean, you look at this. The unemployment rate is at least double what they tell us, or probably more. You've got 50% of the people in this country dependent on government aid of one form or another. So, you know, when you look at all this in the grand scheme of things, you know, when you make people dependent, it's hard to give up that dependency, as we know. Most normal people know that. You know, and it's real interesting, because if you go back to the whole Obamacare debate where this started at, even Nancy Pelosi at that time said, we have to pass it to know what's in it. Now we're finding out more and more that we know what's in it. We have employers that are cutting hours to save money. It's cheaper in some cases for them to pay the penalty than it is to pay for the benefit. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the thing is we often talk about slippery slopes here. And, of course, we're going to pass Obamacare. And David knows, I told you so's. You both know I love I told you so's. And basically said, hey, look, if you're going to force this full-time, you're going to have part-time, you know, have a part-time workforce. And they're doing it. And the thing I look at is the government is so bad at unintended consequences. They really don't think anything through. And even the smallest of businesses can figure this stuff out. And I think one of the problems you're going to run into is and it's widely publicized, you know, people are being hired part-time. to that point, I got to say, oh, no crap. You know, it's like you don't. Yeah, there's a lot of companies just struggling. Everybody likes to hold the GEs of the world up, but the small businesses, they're doing that. So as a business owner, I sit back and wonder, okay, so the government, you know, their answer, and I'm glad this, you know, David's challenging this, because the government answer to something not working is to go in and fix it again.
Yep,
and the
exactly.
thing that we talk about at work is, you know, they're going to fix it in the same brilliant fashion they did before, but the thing that we kind of wonder about is, you know, a full-time employee is not 40 hours anymore. They, you know, they ease that on down to 30 because it works better for the government. And now you find out that the companies are hiring people that are, you know, under 30 hours, and that's going to make it tough on everybody. And hell, it makes it tough on employers. You've got to find more qualified employees because, you know, you can't work them. If you're budget tight, you can't work them. Personally, I'm sitting back wondering when the government is either A, going to mandate that you have to have, you know, for so many hours work, you have to have so many 40-hour employees or 30-hour employees, or they're going to lower it. And then it says, okay, well, we call full-time 25 hours now.
Well, I think ultimately,
I expect something that stupid from our government.
Well, I think ultimately that's what it's going to come down to. Once they realize that all the employers are lowering their hours to 30 hours or less, and you know, we've already had many of them go forward with that. Darden Restaurants, who owns the Olive Gardens, and quite a few other ones have already publicly stated that. So this isn't speculation. This is based on public statements. So
right.
When
I know,
get to that
I know,
point,
I know what the employers are doing. I'm just saying, and that's a very logical step. I'm just saying the government's fixed. I am just sitting back wondering what in the hell they're going to come up with. It's like, well, 25 hours or 20 hours is now full time. You know, at which point all our parents would look at it and go, what?
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem.
Grandpa worked a 40-hour week, damn it.
But that's always been the problem, because here's what we've got. And David, you know, chime in, please. You know, but here's what we've got. Once they go down to these 30 hours, I mean, then the employers are going to have to pay a penalty if they have over 50 employees, for each employee they have, if they're not providing benefits. And you're not going to provide benefits for what's considered part-time today, as you're pointing out, Ed, which may be considered full-time later. But all this is going to do ultimately is raise the cost of goods and lessen jobs. I mean, that's our problem now. We've lost the manufacturing base here. And what Obamacare is going to do is force our what jobs we have left to increase prices. You couple that with these idiots in Congress right now, and I do call them all idiots, trying to talk about this new minimum wage to be somewhere around $10 or $11 an hour, then everything that you're paying for now is going to double within 2 years. So now you're cutting people's hours and wages down. I mean, let's look at the service industry. Let's take that and show what an example this is. Because in the service industry, the servers, waitresses, waiters, things like that, they get paid $2.13 an hour. That's their pay. The reason that they are paid so low is because they make that money up on tips. A good server on a 40-hour week is going to make $500 or $600 a week on tips if they're working at a pretty good place. If they're not doing that, I blame them, not me, for lousy service. What ultimately happens is they're now talking about making the server minimum wage what today's minimum wage is, which is 7 1/4. At that point, if you're somebody that goes into a restaurant and you're allowing, you know, a certain amount of dollars to go towards a tip, well, that server is now making 7 1/4 an hour. So the price of the goods and the price of that food goes up. The price of the drinks goes up to pay for the added wages, and the tips go to non-existent range. When you've got to pay an extra $5 or $10 for your food, that's $5 or $10 that server isn't going to get. So now they've created another situation. Now they're taking money out of these people's mouths by claiming that they're going to be making more with minimum wage. It's a circle jerk. When you say they don't know what they're doing, Ed, they know what they're doing. What they're doing is what the left always does. They're catering for votes. They don't care about the end effect. It's not that there's nobody smart enough or not thinking about that. The only thing they're going to focus on is how to get the votes. Am I wrong, David?
Well, it's bad economics. I mean, yes, politically they know what they're doing. Economically, it's horrendous. And where the ignorance comes in that Ed Martin was talking about is the economic illiteracy that allows this kind of stuff to fly. You know, I want to back up a little bit, hit on something very fundamental before we get too deep in the weeds on this. You know, I hear all the time from the left, oh, you guys, all you guys can do is complain about Obamacare, but where's your plan? What's the alternative? And I'll tell you what the alternative is, very simply. Get the government out of it. If we simply got the government out of health care entirely, I mean entirely, it would be significant. We would have a much better situation in our healthcare system overnight, and I can prove it. We have an alternative health coverage system available to us now. It's called religious health sharing. Look them up. There are three companies available in Kentucky right now that are actually exempt under Obamacare. Obamacare considers them so little of a threat, they're allowing them to continue to exist. But there's Christian Healthcare Ministries, Samaritan Ministries, Christian MediShare. And these three companies operate outside of government regulation. They provide health coverage that people need. And here's the key. It's significantly cheaper than what you can get in government-regulated health insurance, significantly cheaper. Now, they're forced by law to to do one thing, and that's to claim that they aren't insurance. And that's weird. If you can get past that, they have great payment records. They're most the most unbelievable people to deal with, and they have happy customers who are participating in the healthcare system without.
Now, didn't we just have a court challenge to that recently? And then that was,
yeah.
And effectively, that challenge is what forces them to claim that they're not insurance, even though they're operating as basically an insurance agency overall. But all they basically succeeded in at a court challenge was making them say we are not insurance. Is that correct?
Essentially, yes. The definitional issue has been pre-existing. It's been around for a long time. What happened here in Kentucky is after a 10-year-long battle, the state of Kentucky forced the largest religious health sharing group, Christian Medicare, to leave the state as of January of this year. I wrote a bill. Senate Bill 3 is what it wound up being, that would allow them to come back into the state. That bill passed the legislature with almost zero no votes. I mean, we characterize that as, you know, this is a war on Christians. Which side are you on? And that turned out to be a pretty effective approach. So we got Senate Bill 3 passed. That reversed that court decision and allowed Christian Medicare to come back in and allowed these people to continue to operate. But yeah, they did further clarify or made them say in another statement, we're not insurance. But again, I mean, if you can live with them saying we're not insurance, then you wind up with something that looks awful lot like insurance and does a pretty darn good job of covering health care needs.
Well, I tell you what, if you want to explain that to the audience, let me know. We'll put a story up on LouisvillePolitics.com on how that works. I'd love to promote that for you, because right now we do need those alternatives. You know, a lot of people don't even understand. If we could eliminate the government and get them out of health care, how much cheaper your hospital business would be, how much cheaper your doctor business would be. I mean, the reality is, if anybody would actually look at their bill, these people that have insurance still get a statement every time they go to the doctor from their insurance company. And it's mandatory by state law, so they get that. I'm with Humana. I'm with the Humana HMO is who my insurer is. So I get these statements. And you look at things, and it's really fascinating, because what you see is you see a doctor's office visit of $60. The negotiated discount brings that office visit down to $30 or $35. So they've negotiated a $25 discount off of what they perceive to be their normal office visit rate. So then you've got a $25 or $30 copay. Your insurance company's only on the hook for $5 or $10. That's it. That's how it works. It's a big scam, but it's all because of government regulation. If you take that out of the mix, you can negotiate with your doctor on your own for $30 or $35. Why does somebody have to pay an insurance company to pay a doctor's visit that they're not paying you are anyway? So there's so many things. I mean, there's a reason that Tylenol, a regular Tylenol pill, costs $11 at an emergency room, and you can buy a whole bottle of them off the shelf for half that. There's a reason for that, folks. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. We're just a little bit late on it. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Spriggs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network with guest David Adams. Stay tuned. We got a lot more coming at you.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spriggs of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound in.
Hey, everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college?
energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
I love that song. Comedian Tim Hawkins over timhawkins.net. The song is The Government Can, and that's not all he's got, folks. This guy is dynamite. He takes on to everything. I tell you what, it's incredible his take on things and his music, and I find it hilarious every time I listen to the guy. Welcome back to the Ed Spencer Show right here at the MVM Radio Network with our guest tonight, Mr. David Adams. David, you know, I've got to go down one road real quick. I'm going to switch gears on you and talk about retirement systems and things, because I know you're very active involved in that. I want to see what's going on with the Tea Party. But I want to clear up one thing, because I've already got a private instant message, and it just asked me this question literally 20 seconds ago. You know, is this guy the same guy that's involved with Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison? I was surprised by that. I really was. I just got that right as we were getting ready to come back on air. I switched over and saw that. I apologize. Folks, I want to set this record straight. David Adams can be reached at a blog called KentuckyProgress.blogspot.com. Go there. Look at everything David Adams has done and has been doing for quite some time. He is not now, nor has he ever been associated, well, primarily with anybody in the Democratic Party that I can think of, especially two maroons like this, who tried to pull off the biggest coup in the world by naming their so-called super PAC Progress Kentucky. They reversed the name Kentucky Progress. Two Democratic operatives did this crap, and Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison. David Adams does not have one thing to do with that. David, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, this has nothing to do with you, right?
Well, you know, easy answer, no. 8 years ago, when I started when I first got on the internet and decided I wanted to create a political blog for my writings, I thought, you know, my initial thought was, I want to put the name up that attracts liberal readers, and then when they get there and see what I'm writing, once they get past the title, it'll make them mad, and then they'll respond accordingly, and that has worked like a charm for 8 years. Now, sometime in the last year or so, when these guys set up their super PAC to attack Senator Mitch McConnell, they took the name Progress Kentucky. I haven't spoken to them about why they picked that name, but it's hard not to guess that they were looking to take advantage of the confusion about you know, what they're about and what I'm about. You know, I'm they made no mistake about being not a big fan of Senator McConnell. I am actively involved in recruiting somebody to run a Republican primary against him, and the confusion caused by their name being so similar to the name on my blog has led credence to this to Senator McConnell's conspiracy theory stuff about Tea Partiers and left wingers combining forces to run him out of office. You know, the only thing that I want, the only thing that I have in mind with regard to the 2014 U.S. Senate race in Kentucky is putting somebody more conservative than Senator McConnell in office to replace him. That is goal number one. So beyond that, there's no meeting of the minds. There's no collaboration and no relationship with regard to that political campaign or frankly much of anything else. I mean, frankly, I know Curtis. I like Curtis Morrison personally, but we don't see we can be friendly towards each other, but we don't agree on much of anything politically. And
well, I
in terms of any of his activities, we're not working together at all.
Well, I apologize for putting you on a spot like that. I literally just saw that right as we're switching back over, and immediately I'm like, damn, we better get this explained quick. I don't want anybody to be confused with that. And there was a reason they went with Progress Kentucky. I'll be honest with you. They opened this so-called super PAC. They raised $1,000, spent $18, according to reports. But they opened this in December of 2012, just a couple of months ago. You've been in business for 8 years at Kentucky Progress. People should be able to put that together on their own, but sometimes you got to lead the horse to water before he'll drink it. So there you go, folks. Let's get that out of the way. You know, David, there's all kinds of things you've been involved in. You know, over the last few years, it's been incredible how active you have gotten, how much notoriety you've obtained. I mean, you go on national news speaking for the Tea Party and different things. You know, one thing in Kentucky that I know you're real involved in, that's driving the whole world crazy, and we thought they were going to do something in this short session. I alluded to it earlier.
Hey,
this
you
joke
can say,
of retirement.
You can say we thought. I didn't think they were going to do anything.
Well, you know, but we were hoping they would at least try to do something, but it was a joke. David, tell us more on what's going on with this retirement system debacle in Kentucky, because you're up to date on this, and you spend so much time trying to get these guys to do the right thing. What's going on these days with you?
Well, you know, the bill, the Senate Bill 2 that they wound up passing will help the situation only to the extent that they are putting more money in it. And they raised some taxes, they shifted some money from the road fund, which strikes me as quite a bit like this the boondoggle that we've got on the federal level with regard to the what do they call this latest? Oh, the sequester deal.
Yeah.
You know, we're using the sequester, the minuscule cuts in the sequester to shut down things that people get freaked out about. It's like, oh my goodness, we can't have this anymore because of the sequester. You know, the big sequester monsters coming to get us. So we're taking money out of road maintenance, which we need. And putting it into KRS when
right.
There are 1,000 other places, these little cubby holes of graft in state government that we could pull money out of. We could shut programs down. I mean, all the money that we waste on economic development out of Frankfurt, as absurd as an idea as that is, we should shut that cabinet down. We could shut the labor cabinet down. We could shut down the arts, you know, the money that we spend on the arts is absurd, wasted money. I mean, it's not, you know, what you'll hear from people is, oh my goodness, you know, if you shut down economic development and the arts, we're not going to have art. We're not going to have jobs. People won't people won't know how to create businesses without the government there telling them how to do it. It's so totally absurd. So it's a long-standing problem of government mismanagement and misspending. We've been taking money, but we've had ample funds available to properly fund the retirement system. You know, set aside the fact that you know these benefits, that the benefits in those programs are too rich. You know, they were promised benefits. People took those jobs, and that was the deal. Was the deal, and we had the money to put in over time to properly fund those so that it wouldn't risk bankrupting the state. But the legislators repeatedly, for years and years, have not been able to resist robbing the piggy bank. And now that it's time to pay up, they have to go into this, oh, my goodness, we've got to raise taxes. Oh, my goodness, we have to pull money out of road maintenance. And you know,
well, see, that's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah. What's happened here,
well,
David?
Hang on, Ed.
I want to get this in there because what's happened? What's happened here is this: the pensions are funded. The money goes to the state each and every year to fund this pension from those who are covered by this pension, and the taxpayers are on the hook for our share. There's no doubt about that. You know, but the problem is, as you pointed out, and this is what I want to make clear to people: it's not that the money hasn't been there and it's always been underfunded. They have never used the money the way that they legislated it to be used. It gets pulled for other projects. It goes into a general fund, whatever they want, they get. So instead of living within their means on the taxes and doing things the right way, they've just been robbing Peter to pay Paul and finally got caught. Is that correct? Is that a good assessment?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay, Ed, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say also, David touched on something very glancingly, and I kind of lit up. The benefits are too rich. The fact of the matter is it's going to work 4 years of our lives through a Social Security system. It's in the 4% range. That's why you have to work 40 years, 45 years, is because what you're paying into it and what your employer is getting a return. You know, your benefits are based on a return, and right now currently running about 4% and change. The fact that the state, you know, the law say, oh, yeah, you know, what's the best way to garner votes for state employees? Well, say, well, you got to work 50% less than everybody else has to work. You're going to get defined benefit plans. They're too rich, and that's the problems nobody wants to address. It's like, I'm sorry, in this world, 30 and out, unless you're hazardous, dangerous stuff, 30 and out is a joke. It is 50% less than the private sector has to allow for, except in some cases unions, where they might get Ford or stuff. But then again, hey, GM went broke because of that. So I mean, I just think they, you know, on top of everything else, they're promising these benefits. They're going for a 7.75% return, while you and I are getting half that when you compound it. And the lawmakers are afraid to acknowledge that. Maybe they don't understand it, but the fact of the matter is David touched on, the benefits are too rich. It just doesn't work when somebody can go to work for the state, retire when they're 50, and draw full benefits for upwards of 10, 40 more years.
Well, Dan, you bring up some excellent points.
They won't address. They're afraid of the state workers' unions, or in fact, cities and stuff.
You're bringing up some excellent points. You're breaking up too. I need you to move just a little bit because you're breaking
damn
up
it.
For some reason. Huh?
Damn it! All right, I'll get up and move again.
Oh, much
for
better,
you.
Much better. You're coming through clear there.
Okay.
But, you know, you're making some good points here because here's the thing. Because you know one of the biggest problems in Kentucky, and ultimately that's the biggest problem with our retirement systems, and I've got to go there, it's union. I mean, let's face it. I mean, let's be realistic here. When you go to Ford Motor Company, and I can speak from experience, I worked at Ford Motor Company for quite a few years. I took the buyout back in 2007 after I got through with the mayor's race because I realized that's where my future was. But, you know, when you look at that, Ford is a private employer. They deal with a union contract through a private employer. Okay? You compare a job of a Ford worker on a line to a government worker sitting on their butt in an office secretary, for goodness sake, there is no comparison. In the 7.5 years I was at Ford, I had 3 surgeries, a shoulder surgery and a couple of knee surgeries. There's a big difference. When you're dealing with a public sector union, the difference is they don't generate any income to pay for these benefits. They drain income to pay for these benefits. Ford sells cars. They make money. They pay wages. They pay retirement. Everybody's happy. The government doesn't operate that way. But the government wants the same gold plan retirement benefits that the private sector offers, but they don't do anything to recruit money to pay for it other than steal from those who do. Is that right? Is that part of the problem?
And I would also say, in fairness to, you know, to the private versus public sector, it needs to be made a point that just like with Ford with their new hires, when conditions change, you know, they honor their old contracts as best they can, but when conditions change, the employees now at Ford are not getting near the package that is of legend. They're not getting paid nearly as much, and their benefits are not. They're not as great as they used to be, but because the private sector adjusts, the public sector is not adjusting. They're going to bleed out, and I watched the stock market today. And of course, it's always ironic to me that when Republicans want to say privatize some of the Social Security, everybody goes, "Oh hell no!" But the hell, the government employees, like state employees, they effectively have a high percentage of the fund is invested in the stock market. And you know, I think that's what they're really playing for. They're hoping for a big-ass stock market bubble that refunds this, you know, that plumps it back up. But, hey, guys, guess what happened to the stock market today? You know, and that's something I always caution people against since I play that game a little bit, is it's like, yeah, you think it's bad now? Wait till the stock market craters again and tears and pulls down the pension fund with it, which is going to happen. Then what are you going to do?
Well, I think I agree with you there. David, comments?
No, I totally agree. The idea that there's a place for union activity in the private sector, we can debate that. But public sector unions, not a chance. There's no justification for that. We need to get so far away from the concept of union activity in the public sector, do away with the way that they run things, and the business of government, complicated by the prevailing wage, is so horribly wasteful. You shut down prevailing wage practices in the state of Kentucky, and you're talking about saving hundreds of millions of dollars very quickly.
I'm totally with you on that, it's not even the wages. The wages, everybody focuses on wages, and it's really not wages. It's all the benefit costs, health care costs. They've got great health care plans, gold parachute retirement plans. You know, why is the government sector not being forced into 401ks? Now, I understand that that's going to be part of this new system for people coming in, and maybe that will help us down the road. But what's ultimately led us here is this whole bailout mentality, if you will. Well, we found out the banks are going to get bailed out because they can go out and do anything they want to do. We give them a $1 trillion bailout so they don't have to suffer any consequences. I think what you're seeing here is the states are going to be the next bailout. I think all the states are going to be bailed out on their pension plans because everybody almost is failing anymore, and they're looking for the federal government for help, and that's what they're going to do. David, real quick,
yes, sir.
What are updates on Tea Party? What's going on, man?
Actually said some pretty good news this afternoon with regard to my lawsuit against the governor on the health benefit exchange, added a couple of new plaintiffs to the case. Sarah Durand, the president of the Louisville Tea Party, and a lady named Dawn Cloyd, who I always tell people if there were a president of the Lexington Tea Party, which there's not, she would probably be it. So we've got two major Tea Party leaders in the state of Kentucky have joined with me on this case as co-plaintiffs, and I think that it adds an awful lot of intellectual firepower to the cause.
Have you had a chance to talk with your friends in Washington about this? I know you've been awful busy.
You know, I really haven't. Kind of just let them alone on this and trying to focus on just stirring things up, stirring up a little grassroots activity here in the state.
Well, that's what works, man. That's what always works. David, I appreciate your time so much. I didn't mean to keep you this long. I thank you so much for being so lenient with us. We get a little long-winded, and, you know, thanks again for joining us. I'm going to put you back in the queue. Listen in if you want. I appreciate it so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Always
keep a pleasure.
Keep
up the good work.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work, sir. We really appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Martin, I tell you, you know, it's always great for us to get David Adams on air. David Adams fights the fight. He gets involved. He does it each and every day, folks. This isn't somebody, you know, you see some of these groups out there, Progress Kentucky, for example, trying to hijack the name. That was purely intentional. I know the players involved in that. You know, there's so many things that you get people like David Adams out there doing. You get people like the Louisville Tea Party president. You get people, even Jacob Payne over at Page One at Kentucky. You guys really need to check out his exposés on Sean Riley and some of the people within this whole Mitch McConnell illegal tape thing going on. But there's a lot of people to get involved. And David has got to be one of the best guests that we bring on here because he's not shy, man. He'll tell you what he thinks. He puts it out there. All appreciation to him. Ed, you know, I've got to go to this story. This is just amazing to me. I've got to go to this story of what's going on in Louisville. As everybody in Kentucky and practically the nation knows now, there has been an illegally recorded, or alleged illegally recorded, let's do this right to keep the lawyers happy, there's been an alleged illegal recording of a private staff meeting between Mitch McConnell and his supporters at his Louisville office. The recording was made, there's no alleged to this, the recording was made by two people with Progress Kentucky, Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison. A third guy has actually become the focus of the story in Jacob Conway. Jacob Conway has been touted as an executive committee member of the Democratic Party and all of these other things, and he's the one who outed Riley and Morrison. Now, Riley, of course, who has had problems of his own in the past, and really, go to Page One Kentucky and check that out. It's very detailed. But, you know, people don't really understand how politics work in Louisville or throughout this state. At LouisvillePolitics.com, we are actively pursuing and we are actively engaging in outing every one of these fools. Riley, Morrison, and Jacob Conway are not smart people. They're not smart enough to do this crap on their own. They never have been. I know all of these guys on a personal level. They've been on my radio show. I've worked with Kurt Morrison on a couple of stories. Kurt's a great guy, but he's not very intelligent, and he doesn't think things through in the future. That's just the way it is. Sean Riley has only ever been concerned with Sean Riley, and he will lie, cheat, and steal and get whatever he wants that way. You know, and Jacob Conway, anybody can use. You're not dealing with the super intelligent people. So here's your questions, Ed, and this is what we're outlining at LouisvillePolitics.com. The Democrats here in Louisville have got a sordid history. You've got to start naming the people that they associate with and their histories as well, and that's what we've been outing. Jeff Noble in Louisville is one of the key players in this whole debacle. We've outlined it there. This is going to take us, when we get through with the series that we're working on, we're going to bring down everybody all the way up to Greg Fisher, probably John Yarmuth, and maybe beyond. It will include Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson and possibly Steve Beshear. You're going to see a whole group of sexual deviants, pedophiles, and that kind of group that's working, making all the things in Louisville, making decisions for you, the taxpayer. Ed, what do you think about something like that?
Well, you know, I want to start first off by saying, you know, I think one of the it's sort of sad, but in a morbid way, it's kind of entertaining. You know, I'm watching, at least I know in Kurt Morrison, and I believe to a degree in Jacob Conway, you've got some idealistic young men who were, you know, they're doing the grunt work. And I tend to agree with you that I don't think it was just they just said, hey, guess what, you know, and let's go make a recording and be mischievous. But I think you've got some very idealistic young men, enthusiastic young men, that have gone out and they've tried to do the right thing by somebody. And I think the really distressing thing is, and like I say, like you said, you and I know Kurt. I think Kurt's a great guy. I think Kurt's getting totally thrown under the bus on this one. And I think there's it's something for young people. It's got to be discouraging for younger people and stuff when they look at this and think, oh, well, you know, if you're not one of the big money players, you're expendable. And it's somewhat disturbing. You know, like I said, it, some of these people I consider friends, and it's like, wow, get ready to get thrown under the bus. And there's nothing I can do to help you. There's nothing too many people can do to help you. I just hope they bite back. But, it's a mess. And it's politics. It's everything people don't like about politics. It's underhanded. You know, it's vicious. And it apparently is full of pushing people onto the rails and stabbing them in the back, too. It's a sordid affair, but the die is cast. And it's going to play out. It's too late for it not to. It kills me the way that the people, they'll use people. The party higher ups will use people, put them out, and then the minute something goes wrong, you know, you got somebody like John Yarmuth calling them petty thieves, and they just need to retire from this. It's like, well, you know, I bet prior to this, you were probably applauding their efforts because Ashley Judd was, you know, that's the name he threw out there. And these guys were standing up to defend, you know, his girl, I guess you could say. And it just amazes me the way that the smaller players, the non-big money players, get thrown under the bus. And it's a bit aggravating, I'll be honest.
Well, it's fascinating. What's really fascinating is, you know, every one of these people are tied into John Yarmuth. And we can prove that. John Yarmuth is the one who touted Ashley Judd. John Yarmuth is the one who's done everything he could to try to make her viable, at least in the public eye. Our friend Dale the Truth will sit here and tell us that she was never a serious contender, that this was all some kind of a game. What really is interesting is how all of these people are trying to distance themselves from these guys. And we've got all kinds of pictures, public statements, all kinds of stuff to tie them all together. I can't believe they're this dumb. And that includes John Yarmuth. John Yarmuth was on MSNBC today talking about how Progress Kentucky is an embarrassment and these guys are petty thieves. But his paid opposition research guy, Jeff Noble, is part of the problem here. I'm sure he's involved in this. There's no doubt about it. So, these are my opinions. I can make any opinion I want to, folks. It's my show. Take it for what you will. You don't have to believe me, but do the public record. You know, you can go out and find everything about Jeff Noble's soliciting underage boys for sex. Bruce Ewing going out as a pedophile priest who was just convicted in 2007 for third-degree sodomy against a 14-year-old girl. All of these people go to former Alderman Steve Mogry, who is one of Jim King's best friends, if you read Jim King's newsletter. And every bit of this goes back to Greg Fisher and Chris Pointer. We've got pictures of Chris Pointer and Jeff Noble together. So, you know, all of these things are intertwined, and that's what we're outlining over at Louisville Politics. We're going to take this stuff out, and that's just the way it is. Ed, final thoughts.
Now, final thoughts, I'll digress a little bit to something David said, you know, and it gets to everything from Obamacare to the pensions, which are, you know, when it gets right down to it, these are big money deals that may affect you getting a job, being able to pay for your insurance, you know, having enough money to take a vacation. David said they don't teach economics in school, and as you well know, going way back, ever since you've known me, that has been one of my, you know, the American education system, be it because of the unions, just be it because, you know, hey, sometimes economics is just tough. It might bring your grade point average down. But we don't teach economics. And if you see from a lot of things I write, it just drives me nuts that people don't understand what's coming at them in the form of economics. They don't, you know, whether it's household economics or corporate economics or government economics. It just amazes me how it gets past people. And I empathize and totally agree with David. I wish to high heaven that they would teach at least basic economics and basic finance in school, because you're going to need it no matter where you are in life. You're going to need a basic understanding of it. And, yeah, you know, that would solve a lot of problems because people would become more aware.
You know, you're right about that. And, you know, I'm not going to rant and rave on what's going on with the McConnell situation right now, which I normally do at the end of the show. I may do that tomorrow night. But tonight we had guest David Adams on here. And when you look at the things that David is involved in, you look at Obamacare, you look at the retirement systems, and you look at all the problems facing Kentucky, you know, what's interesting to me is how many people are still unaware, are either still unaware or are still blind to what's really going on. And that's what we're hoping we're accomplishing at Louisville Politics this week by outing all of these different relationships. Because Obamacare, these Kentucky health exchanges that David Adams just filed a lawsuit on, that's a huge lawsuit, folks. This is going to set the tone probably for the whole country. If David wins this lawsuit, and all indications are that he will, since Steve Beshear violated the Kentucky revised statutes, where do you go from here? Where do you go from here? Does it go to the Kentucky Supreme Court, or does it go beyond that? Because there's going to be a lot more to this story going forward, but it's going to set the stage for other states to follow who are involved in this mess. We've already seen a lot of Republican governors backtracking and deciding to go ahead and capitulate to the mandates of Obamacare, especially in the Medicare portion of it. We've already seen this. You know, so where are the conservatives leading the way on these issues? They're not there. They're not there. The Republican Party sold out long ago and decided they were either A, too scared to win, or B, they were quite simply happy with where they were at and what little bit of control they had. As long as these elected people are getting what they want out of the situation, which is money, power, and ego, the people really don't matter. You have not had a two-party system for quite some time, especially here in Kentucky. So I'm hoping that this lawsuit by David Adams going forward will answer a lot of questions on Obamacare and force the states to do their job, force the conservatives to get off of their butt. I can think of three conservatives in Washington right now. Rand Paul leads the way, Tom Massey and Ted Cruz. Can anybody name others? The whole purpose of a two-party system is so that you can have conflict, you can communicate, and you can get to the greater good. What's best for all of us? That's why the Uniparty is alive and well, because neither cares about what's best for all of us. It's not of the people, by the people, and for the people anymore. It's of the politician, by the politician, and for the party. And that's alarming. Thank you, David Adams, for your efforts. Thanks to our listeners for listening in. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com. Hell of a lot going on, folks. And we will keep you posted tomorrow night on more of the Louisville shenanigans. Ed Martin, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, sir.
And we'll see you tomorrow night as well, right here at 7 o'clock. Tune in tomorrow night at 7. Ed and I will catch up on all the latest Wednesday night with Dale the Truth. And until then, folks, have a great night. Thank you for listening.